Gather round. Witness the memoirs of 5'9 being read as he sees it fit. Police sirens behind him while he's driving instantly causes butterflies in his stomach, even though he's legit.
Now, brothers and sisters, they have not stopped. It's about to hit the fan. What is it?
Good morning, and thank you for calling and listening in to the Positive Male Response, a campaign that's been headed by the Justice from A to Z organization. My name is Padrea Moore, and I'm so happy and elated to be the host for today's show, as well as the secretary for Justice from A to Z. This topic today is going to be talking about success never being out of reach, of which I will have my guest and co-host, his name is Lawrence, a very good childhood friend of mine, discuss his road to owning his own business. And if I can right now, Lawrence, I'll give it to you. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lawrence Haywood. I am the owner of Haywood Plumbing Services Incorporated. I've been in business for 7 years now. I'm a plumbing and gas contractor here in the state of North Carolina. Very young business. Started this almost 7 years ago after I walked out of prison. And that's it.
Okay, so you did mention that you went to prison, but I want to talk about, you know, what life was like with you before going to prison. Tell me, how was it just growing up for you?
I'm an immigrant. I came to this country in 1988. I was 8 years old at that point. Started going to elementary school here. One of the things I experienced going to elementary school here was trying to fit in, being from a different country. I spoke English language, but, you know, I had an accent, so certain words I couldn't pronounce. So as a child, you know, I dealt with a lot of issues as far as being picked at, which then later on caused me to be the sort of person to try to fit into society, meaning I started doing things to fit in, whether it was bad things, crime, whatever. By the time I was 10 years old, I was already a convicted felon, kicked out of school.
Mm-hmm. I know your mother and I know your background. How was school looked at in your household? What were, like, the expectations and things like that?
Well, as far as my mother and expectations for school, she really didn't have much of any due to the fact that my family is first generation here in this country. So we basically had a crash course of America, my mom, as well as my siblings. So it really wasn't expectations. We just went to school, you know. If you ask me about
school,
I could tell you, mm-hmm. you know, I was a straight A student. I just, outside of school, my extracurricular activities led me to a life of crime.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
in the classroom, so, you know, I was an AP honor roll student.
And with you being an AP honor roll student, were you, like, afforded any type of opportunities for advancement? And I know with you mentioning being an immigrant, you know, how was that?
Let's see. You said opportunities for advancement. I mean, I basically went to this Charlotte-Mecklenburg Public Schools, so I had the same opportunities as everyone else had. One thing I could say, that one great opportunity I had, was when I was in the sixth grade, I was one of the first students selected for the IB program that's in North Carolina now. I am one of the first students in Charlotte-Mecklenburg to be in that program and to have complete that program. So that was probably the biggest opportunity for advancement that I was given through my education here in North Carolina.
Okay. So with you being given that opportunity, how did that or what transpired after high school, knowing, you know, you're a straight-A student, you're in the IB program. So what happened after high school?
What happened in high school as far as why I got into trouble, it had nothing to do with my grades. It had nothing to do with, you know, anything. It was basically me trying to get a reputation, and not a good reputation, but a reputation. Let's see, growing up in the early 90s, I don't know if people remember or not, but it was pretty much cool to be a bad guy. So everyone, you know, you played the hard role, you ran around being tough, you know, you fought, you done things like that. So I was in that stage of my life during high school, which was the years of 1995 through 98. And during that time, like I said, I spent a lot of time trying to fit in and build this reputation. And, you know, I started outside of my grades. I started accumulating felony charges.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my high school experience. I had felony charges. I was also shot in high school. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, if you could hold off for 1 second. We do have a caller, and I want to thank you for joining us and talking about how success is never out of reach. Lawrence has told us about how he was an immigrant into this country at a young age. He knew English, but, you know, wasn't familiar with American culture. However, he was able to advance in school and become a straight-A student, and he was the first to be accepted into the International Baccalaureate Program, the IB program within the school system. And but something changed after high school, despite his educational attainments and his God-given intelligence. Something changed, and so we just really want to have him, you know, let us know that still success is never out of reach despite things changing. So you said you started racking up felony charges, and I'm pretty sure this is not what your mother had planned for you, seeing how you were doing so well in school.
No, it wasn't. In fact, you know, at 18 years old, I caught a felony charge for attempting to shoot a kid at another school, and that was the first time I had to disclose to my mother what I was doing outside. She showed up at the school to actually defend me, you know, say, my son doesn't carry guns, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. And I literally had to pull my mother to the side to disclose, you know, certain things I was doing that she had no idea of. So, no, it wasn't part of her plan to have a criminal son, but it happened.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you mentioned the fact that, you know, she tried to defend you, because that's something we do see a lot of parents doing.
Yeah, she was there. She defended me. She tried anyway, but like I said, I had to stop the embarrassment I was causing towards my mother, and I had to pull her to the side and have a conversation with her. And ever since then, you know, me and my mother, we've been on, you know, we have an understanding. We've always had one ever since that day. So it's a good day.
It's a good day.
Okay. It was a good day.
So with the felony charges that you started racking up, this is, can we say, like, immediately after high school, or was this during the high school years?
Let's see. Actually, my first felony charge I ever acquired in my lifetime, I actually got that at the age of 10 years old.
Okay.
I was in elementary school, and me and a group of guys decided to do some breaking and entering and some vandalism. So that was actually my first felony, but it was on my juvenile record. Throughout my childhood, I had other charges, but they're sealed in my juvenile records. 18 years old, my first official felony that counted against me was possession of a firearm and attempted murder. Well, not murder. It wasn't attempted murder. I'm sorry. Attempted assault on an individual. Then by the age of 21, 21, 22, around that time, I accumulated another felony charge that had to do with breaking and entering. A couple years later, I received another felony charge that had to do with possession of firearms. Then 3 years after that, I received some more felony firearm charges and DUI and drug charges. And by the time I was 25 years old, I had accumulated five felony charges. My last felony charge was trafficking cocaine. And by 27, I was in prison. At the age of 27,
okay.
I had
Well, before you go in on to that, because I really want for everyone to get the opportunity to hear this, I would like to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to find out exactly what happens to a straight-A student who started racking up felony charges. What's the end result of that, the consequence of that? So after this break, we'll come back and we'll talk about that.
You are listening to A to Zaya's Blog Talk Radio Show, Positive Male Response. And we just want to thank all of the listeners for tuning in every Saturday between 10 to 10 p.m., where you can catch knowledge, power, impactful messages to engage and bring our young men back to the place where they need to be. You're going to hear stories just as today from our guest on the show who has transformed his life from being a good kid, a knowledgeable kid, to becoming in the system, in the legal system for drugs and violence. However, his life has changed. Check him out with his company, Haywood Plumbing Services Incorporated. You can call him anytime, any day, to take care of your plumbing needs. His number is 704-675-7246, and he is located in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. Thank you for listening, and patronize all Black-owned companies. This is A to Zaya's Moment.
Okay. Thank you all for coming back and joining us. And please encourage other friends, family members, associates to call in and listen as well as we discuss how success is never out of reach with our guest today, Lawrence of Haywood Plumbing Services, who has been telling us about his life from the beginning as a student and then, you know, what changed, what transpired into his life where he actually started getting involved in some drug activity and carrying weapons and things such forth, which led to the consequence of what was that, Lawrence?
Going to prison.
Going to prison at the age of how old?
27.
27 years old. So you're in prison on charges ranging from what?
27 years old, I was in prison for trafficking cocaine and felony DUI.
And how much time were you given in prison?
It was a mandatory charge of 3 years to 3.5 years.
Mandatory.
Mandatory.
Mandatory. So you're facing 3 to 3.5 years at the age of 27 for drug charges. Did you
Correct.
Just think that that was the end for you?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Did you think that that was the end? Now you're in prison, there's no hope. Yeah.
I didn't really think it was the end. The only thing I really feared when I was actually in prison, it wasn't, because I knew in 3 years I could get out of prison. The biggest thing that I was afraid of with me being an immigrant, I was afraid of deportation. I was afraid that I was going to be kicked out of America because I had been here so long, and all I have done was accumulate, you know, felony charges and committed crimes. So, you know, with that being said, the country still had the right to say, you're not a citizen here, you need to leave. So that's
okay.
What I was afraid of in prison.
Okay. And so were you ever actually approached with that?
No, I wasn't. The one time I was approached with it was when the DEA attempted to manipulate me into, well, they attempted to coerce me into working for them, you know, setting people up. So they threatened to deport me if I didn't cooperate with them. But that's as far as it went. I got threatened with it. I didn't cooperate with them, and then, you know, I kept my fingers crossed throughout my prison sentence. And my very last day, you know, that's the only thing I really feared was they showing up and saying, you have to leave.
I want to get into some more about this coercion. Caller, we have a caller calling in. If you could introduce yourself.
Good morning. This is Delzora Barnett. I am the president of Justice from A to Zayas, and I wanted to thank our guest today for coming on to the show and sharing such a phenomenal story. This really ties into the topic, success is never out of reach, because a lot of people believe that once you have got into whatever it is, any type of trouble, any type of legal issue, and you're in prison, that when you come out, some people don't think there's hope. They believe that if they don't have a right connection, you know, they just won't be able to make it. So they find themselves back into situations. They become victims, so to speak, on the outside, because now a lot of times people don't want to hire them. I like the fact, and it's Mr. Haywood, is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Haywood, I like the fact that you have become self-employed. You started your own business, and that's what the young people need to understand. Of course, we're definitely not encouraging you. We want you to avoid any implications of getting in trouble, going to prison, and that's what why Mr. Haywood is sharing his story, because this is something you can't avoid. And like he stated, he wasn't no uneducated kid, you know, as people would say, dumb kid. He was very smart. But he allowed himself to just be a kind of sort of, would you say, Mr. Haywood, sort of like being a follower into the crime instead of being a leader into what your parents had established for you?
Well, what I would say as far as me, and I can't speak to, you know, for everyone, but when I sit back and I look on my life, what I'm going to say is because of the absence of male role models, I never met my father. I never met my father in my life. So I came here. My mother had four kids. We came here in 1988. So being immigrants and not from this country, we didn't have a male role model. I didn't have an uncle, a granddaddy, anybody in my life. So as I grew up in the neighborhood, there were older guys there, which didn't happen to be drug dealers. Those are the guys I actually looked up to because they allowed me to either wash their cars for money, cut grass, you know, things of that nature. So,
You had a role model, but they just wasn't doing positive things.
Negative role model,
so to speak. And you had a negative role model instead. So with Mr. Haywood, listeners, if you're listening, and please call in to engage in this conversation at 516-595-8311, because this is another aspect of not having a positive role model, but having a negative role model that's leading you down a bad journey. But here's the key to that. After that, if you've been listening, Mr. Haywood, life changed. He owns his own business. Now he's taking a positive aspect. And so that's why I jumped on, because I want our young people, even in our organization, our young men that's on our mentor program, and even young men in our organization, to understand that success is never out of reach. And the point is, I'm not just talking about success for making millions and all of this. I'm talking about success in your character. Success in the abilities that God has given you that you're able to display in a positive atmosphere. So if you're listening, continue listening to this story and call in and ask questions and get engaged in this, because there is hope at the end of the tunnel. There is hope.
Yes.
And so thank you, Mr. Haywood.
And speaking of that, you know, our youth, they face a lot of pressures with society, and if you look at the music and the videos and the movies, it almost seems like it's cool to go to prison, you know, first 48 has just glorified a lot of crimes that I don't agree with. And was your prison time fun?
Prison time, what? I'm sorry?
Was it fun? You know, was it like, you know, a great cross of bear as being seen as now?
And I'm just gonna be honest with you. I could have made prison fun if I wanted to. The opportunity was there. Why I didn't make prison fun was the fact that I went to prison. I got my charges, I was 25 years old. But because of personal issues, I went on the run. I delayed my actual prison sentence. I didn't go to prison till I was 27. But up until then, I had fathered a child and was bringing a child into this world. I went to prison. My child mother was 5 months pregnant. So with that being said, that's what made me start changing my life was the fact that I had a child that was going to be born into this world, and I was going to be in prison. So I didn't go to prison to have fun. I went to prison because I didn't want to be there anymore, and I knew I had to take care of the responsibility. So, I said, fun was there. I could have had fun if I wanted to, but I didn't. Because in prison, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have a question, because I understand what Ms. Quadra is asking about prison being fun. When I think about that, and I used to be a correctional officer, so I worked in the prison.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't say, Quadria, that you can, in being a guard in the prison, that it becomes something that you just make fun. You have to make a way to survive and tolerate.
Exactly.
And most people who have accepted their challenge, accepted what they did wrong, have to, you know, make amends and be able to survive in that atmosphere. So they make it, you know, a decision to, you know, try to make it the best that they can while they're in there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way as a guard, and if I had to be in prison, that I'm going to allow myself to be comfortable and complacent to the fact that, okay, prison is okay, it's all right. Because you have lost your freedom. You are confined to a certain thing dictated to you on a day-to-day basis. So I think a lot of people, Quadra, make, you know, they're like, they accept their responsibility. I'm in here. I mess up. I'm going to make the best of it. Where you have people who educate themselves while they're in there, who think about things like Mr. Haywood said, I have a child now that's out there. I gotta start thinking a different way and just tolerate this, but work towards I got to come out of it.
Right, and that's what I really admire about Lawrence's story with the talk that he's given me. And if you could just share, like, was that aha moment just started to come to light with you realizing, that, okay, you have responsibilities. Is this when you decided to go ahead and take up learning how to be a plumber?
No, actually, me being a plumber, you know, that was just, you know, I'll give you a little background on that. I actually sold crack cocaine, and one of the guys that I sold this drug to, after I got into trouble, I had reached out to him because I've done like, you know, everyone does when we get into trouble. I call myself trying to walk the straight and narrow path. And I started painting houses. So I reached out to him, you know, to ask him, you know, if he encountered anyone that needs my service of painting, would he refer me? And he basically turned to me and expressed how much, you know, he had liked me as a person and didn't want to see me go to prison for the rest of my life. And he explained to me, you know, he was a plumbing contractor.
So
he owned
this,
his own
this
business.
Sounds like this is where your role model started to come into your life at what, 27, no, 30-ish, like?
No,
30
was
around
26.
The time?
26.
Okay,
26.
So now we see the role model emerging. Out of
yes.
The most ironic type of way, somebody who you were selling drugs to, who's a drug user, now becoming
and, you
your role
know,
model in a positive light.
And he was, in fact, he's a 52-year-old white man. And, you know, he pulled me to the side and he told me, you know, how much he liked me as a person. And he didn't want to see me spend the rest of my life in prison. He would refer me to other people to paint houses, but he needed a helper. Do I mind working for him? And all he could pay me is $400 a week. At that point, you know, I thought about it, and I really wasn't doing anything. I was really frustrated. you know, where my life was at that point, selling drugs. I had a lot of disappointment from friends. People really wasn't there for me like they say they were going to be for me. So I was really disappointed, hurt. Took his opportunity, and I gained about 11 months before I actually had my trial started.
So you kind of humbled yourself with the $400 a week.
I mean, I really had no choice. I took $400 a week and I worked, learned the business, and went to prison.
So it sounds like that first step to making that change is that you have to humble yourself. You know, you admit the wrongs and the things that you do need to change in order to become successful.
Well, at that point, I hadn't. At that point, I was really just, you know, just trying to stay out of trouble. And,
okay.
You know, that right there, him giving me an opportunity to work, just kept me out of my normal, which would be, you know, waking up, sitting at home and stressing and worrying about what's going to happen in the next few months or whatever. So him just giving me the opportunity just to have something to do on a daily was a stress reliever for me.
So, Mr. Hayward, let me say this. You know, back in the day, and I'm so glad you shared this part of your story about this guy, this older gentleman who was a drug dealer, but said, look,
a drug user.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was the gentleman. See, and this is one of the things I've told young people back in the day when I was growing up. There, you could be a, so to speak, the bad guy in the neighborhood, the bad guy in the neighborhood. But if you saw Miss Jenny's son and you've been watching him, those guys back then, when I was growing up, they wouldn't encourage the young boys to do what had messed them up. They would be like, here, boy, here goes some change. Stay out of trouble. Go to school. Don't let me catch you doing this and this because I'm going to tell your mama. And that's what I want people to understand. Every person that have gotten their self in a bad situation is not a negative role model. Sometimes they can be doing what's wrong, but they'll encourage you to do what's right. However, a lot of times, though, some kids are still looking at, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I see what you're doing. So that's a part for those positive, good dudes in heart who have an issue using drugs but still trying to see good in somebody else. So there's it's like a triple effect in this thing. But the thing is, I prefer that than to have the ones who are pushing these kids to do what is wrong out here. I prefer if I messed up and they're still trying to guide the people in the neighborhood, kids, to do what's right. That helps more than pushing them to do what's negative. And back in the day, that's what you had around the corner, you know?
And to like elaborate on what you're saying and to get down onto the kids' lingo, like, you know, it's okay to listen to the crackhead. It's okay to listen to the bum in the street because they may just be telling you some good advice that can potentially keep you from being in the situations that they're in. As such, what happened with this 52-year-old white male who was buying his drugs from a 25-year-old black male to you. So if we can, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Lawrence, I want you to discuss, like, the development of your own business.
Okay.
Gather round. Witness the memoirs of 5'9 being read as he sees it fit. Police sirens behind him while he's driving instantly causes butterflies in his stomach, even though he's legit.
Now, brothers and sisters, they have not stopped. It's about to hit the fan.
You are listening to A to Zaya's Blog Talk Radio Show, and we're continuing with Success is Never Out of Reach. Please listen in for positive inspiration, because all young boys can be successful and become positive men of today.
Well, thank you. We're back. And callers, please call in at 516-595-8311 to hear the story of a successful now plumber who in the early stages went to prison for drug activity and guns and carrying guns, and has since changed his life around. And we're coming back in now with to continue on your story of how you developed your business after hearing, you know, words from probably the least person that you expected to hear it from, someone that you sold drugs to who was a drug user who just basically wanted to see you do better than what you were doing. So tell us about the beginning stages of developing your business.
Beginning stages of developing my business. Well, let's see. I walked out of prison June 21st, 2009. I faced some challenges. One challenge I faced was some personal issues with my son's mother. She basically wrote me off due to the fact that I'm a five-time convicted felon, and at that point I had a 56-page background. So basically I was wrote off as, you know, this guy is...
Wait, say again, 56 pages. I really want the callers to know that
page.
And you still have that on your background to this day.
And I still have it attached to me. I have a 56-page background, and I have a 5 felony convictions. But that being said, I believe my son's mother, along with the rest of society, wrote me off as going back into the revolving doors. When I first walked out of prison, well, let me back up. During prison, closer to my release, there was a lot of programs in prison that were promising this and that as far as rehabilitation. When I stepped out of prison, all of that was false hope. You know, everything that I was told.
So
who
promised the rehabilitation?
The prison system. You know, they would have people that would come in. They had this program called post-release. And they would have us take these classes. You would have to do this. This was mandatory. Your last 90 days of prison or last 4 months of prison, you have to be enrolled into this post-release program where you're going to these meetings. People are coming in offering you this type of help, this organization to tell you they have this help for you, that help for you. When you walk out of prison, we're here for you. So with that being said, I put my faith into that, and I walked out of prison, and I go to check on these things and got nothing but disappointment. I got disappointment from social service, disappointment from every organization. Because I had a drug manufacturing charge, trafficking cocaine and distributing cocaine, I am not subject to any type of governmental help. I don't get any help,
okay,
financial aid.
We have a caller. Let me bring in this new caller. Hello, caller. If you can. I'm sorry.
Hello?
Hello, caller. If you can introduce yourself, we're speaking with Mr. Haywood as he speaks on the topic of how success is never out of reach.
Good morning. My name is Eulalia Hall, and I'm the Ethics and Compliance Officer for Justice from A to Z.
Okay, thank you for joining us. All right. So, Mr. Haywood, you were saying that pretty much the help that the government says that they place in these institutions for rehabilitation was not there for you at the
No, it wasn't there for me because there's stipulation on the help. You know, certain charges, you know, if you have drug charges, depending on the drug charge, you're disqualified from a lot of government assistance, especially if you have trafficking charges and things like that, distribution charges. For the rest of your life, you do not get any benefits from the government. We're talking about from Medicaid to Social Security.
Okay.
You forfeit all
And even and that type of charge also affects the housing, not just public housing, but if you want to go out and get your own apartment.
We're talking about from food stamps, anything that you can get from the system, you do not get that if you have a manufacturing drug charge. So where
did you end up with no benefits and no help? Did you go back to your mom's house?
No, I ended up literally being homeless because of my pride wouldn't allow me to go back to my mother's house. So I was homeless. But I did have some friends who would let me sleep on their floors, couches, whatever needed at that time. You know, I thank them to this day for it. But I had some friends that, you know, gave me that comfort. So I wasn't
technically homeless. Well, I mean, that is considered, you know, with me working with the homeless population, yes, you were considered homeless.
I mean, yeah, I would say I was homeless. I didn't have my own place to lay my head. But I did have some friends that would let me, you know, use their house or whatever. And during that time, you know, I was dealing with a child situation. I thought I had a child, and the woman that I had the child with started saying the child wasn't mine. And, you know, I went through a year or 2 years of just kind of depression. And I was back and forth with this woman, you know, going back and forth, situations was happening. And I started realizing that if I didn't fix my life, everything that the woman was telling my child about me, the negative things, I was going to manifest them and make them true. So one of the hardest decisions I had to make was I literally had to walk away from my child at 3 years old and be absent from his life. I am just up to November of last year is my first attempt into getting into my child's life because of that. I spent the past 6-7 years fixing my life so I can be a positive parent to my child.
That's another challenge.
Being out of prison, like I said, I was wrote off by society, my child's mother. A lot of people wrote me off as, you know, I was going to be back into the system. And I didn't want that for myself. I didn't want that for my child, especially growing up not having a father, not knowing a father. You know, I told myself, you know, I'm going to do right. And doing right was, you know, starting my business. And I just took a leap of faith. You know, I applied for jobs. No one would hire me. I wouldn't even get an interview, you know. Wouldn't even get an interview. Wouldn't even get a phone call. So what I did was I wrote the state because as a convicted felon, I couldn't even hold a plumbing license. So I wrote the state and I explained my situation to them. I explained to them, you know, I have the ability to do this type of work, but I am not being employed because of my background. And also when I do get employment, I'm being underpaid because of my background.
So is it safe to say that you took matters in your own hands with actually challenging the state, seeing as how now you are a fully rehabilitated ex-felon? I mean, well, not ex-felon, ex-convict.
Yes. So I pushed. I just kept pushing for them. And at first what they did was they sent me the application. I filled it out, bought my own books. All of that cost me a total of about $1,300. But then the guy that I worked for, the guy that endorsed me, the original guy that signed my papers, they didn't believe him due to the fact of his history because he used drugs before. He had gotten into some trouble years prior for selling his license. So once he endorsed my application, they felt I had paid for that signature. So they didn't take his word for it.
They thought you committed fraud, basically.
Correct. Correct.
You still have this mark on your back coming out of prison as you're trying to become successful and, you know, develop your own business. You still have a mark on your back, which we're no strangers to in society.
And the guy that's helping me, he has marks on his back. And so that's a hurdle that got through in my way. So then while I was in prison, I actually worked for another plumbing company. Making $15 an hour in prison on work release. So I approached that company to endorse my paperwork. I called the owner. He asked me, was I out of prison? I told him yes. He said yes, he will endorse my papers. So I mailed it to him, and a few months went by. I never heard back from him. When I picked up the phone and I called him and asked him did he endorse my paper, he told me no, he didn't. He said he gave it to his wife, and they decided to throw it in the trash. Now, my history with this guy was, while I was in prison, I critiqued his work. He did some bad work, and I critiqued him, and he literally fired me, told me, forgot where I'm at. I am not his equal. So he fired me in prison.
Do you, Okay. So with you coming to him, do you think this was like a form of retaliation?
Well, I don't know. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to be doing, getting the endorsement. I did work for this guy, so he knows my ability. He knows my skills, so I just need his signature.
We have one more caller. I'm sorry, Lawrence. Let me bring in this caller so they can hear your story.
As well, Ms. Moore, let's see if the callers have any questions.
Okay. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes. Yes. This is Misty Jones calling from I Am Every Woman magazine. And I just had a few questions, statements, really, for you guys. I was listening to the radio show, and I heard him say that he didn't have any positive male role models. And I'm steady listening to the story, and I was thinking about me with a conversation with my husband. That's why I tell him all the time, our positive males have to reach out to kids. Everybody wants to cast them out if they're doing wrong. You know, don't nobody want to be bothered with the kids that have a problem, the kids that's running the streets, the kids that's selling drugs, the kids that's, you know, that's doing negative things. Nobody want to be bothered with them, but they would take a child under their wings if they be on a roll, you know, if they doing all the good stuff. They take the good kids under their wings, but the bad kids are left behind. So my thing is to the guys, if you're listening, get a child, lead them in the right direction, because if you don't, the drug dealers will. You understand what I'm saying? The drug dealers will. He just said it. He had no positive male role model in his home. Nobody reached out to him but the drug dealers. So if we don't get a positive person to reach out to our youth, the streets will. The drug dealers will. The homosexual will. Somebody going to reach out to them. So we have to continue to speak to our older guys to let them know they need to reach out to our guys, to our young men, to our youth that's in trouble. Don't just
Ms.
look
Misty.
Over them. Do not just cast them away. Reach out to them.
And Miss Misty, you're definitely so right about that, because you when you said most people want to help out the kid or reach out to the kid that's doing right, you are 100% correct, and that's why this is so relevant and so important that this story is going forward and that we engage in this dialogue as we're doing, because you can't just feel as if the kids who are appearing to be the good kids, like people like to call them, are the only ones you need to attend to, because understand this, good kids make bad choices. Okay?
Right.
And bad people sometimes, for instance, the gentleman who was using the drugs can make some good choices, as he did to affect Hayward's life, you know, to tell him, I don't want to see you go down this path. I don't want to see you go to prison for life. So as Ms. Misty has stated, we have to be able to reach all people. And by doing that, we also have to be open and honest. We can't be hiding, because I don't care if you're an Ivy League student. You have Ivy Leagues who are providing the drugs on the street, okay?
Right.
There are no good people, personally. If the Bible says so, and I'm a Christian, that's what I believe in. So there are no good people. Only Jesus is good, which means that we all mess up. So when we're doing right, when we're trying to walk positive, we can't leave out the kids whose pants is hanging down. First of all, stop worrying about his pants hanging down and start getting into his mind and his heart, and he'll pull his own pants up. So you're definitely right, and this is the kind of conversations we have to have. We have to, men, if you're listening out there, first of all, stop just being concerned about the people in your house.
Right.
Ladies, if you're listening out there, stop being so critical, and let's start engaging in the kid who is a problem, who has a smart mouth. Let's not get into arguments with kids. Let's get into conversations to help and educate our kids. You understand what I'm saying?
Ladies, before y'all go too far now, I will tell you now, I did have positive male role models that did attempt to speak to me throughout my childhood, but I wasn't receptive of it. I will add that to it.
that's thing even is, more vital they can't to know. Stop. But they can't stop. See, that's the problem. And I say this personally from an organizational standpoint where I had members who would tell me about a kid, man, he keep doing this. I ain't got time for this. Well, you need to make time because guess what? If you don't make time in somebody else's child's life, when your child goes astray or do something wrong, you're going to want somebody to make time for yours because we can't be there around the clock 24/7. And so, Mr. Hayward, yes, you probably wasn't trying to listen. Most kids who want to get in trouble, who want to be mischievous, who want to have, you know, you got the kids who just, their parents can't afford things. So they start stealing because they just want to have what other kids have. We can't not give up. When the kid is not listening, we got to find another angle. And, yeah, sometimes at the end it takes going to prison to get a wake-up call. But if I've impacted or if you've impacted the child with some positive things while they're sitting in prison, they're thinking about that. They're going to remember that good old conversation from Mr. Jones or Miss So-and-so so that when they do come out, they'll fight a little harder for the straight and narrow. So at the end of the day, we can't make excuses and say, well, they're not listening, so let them just bump their head. No, we still have to be positive in front of them, give them encouraging words so that when they, I mean, come on, really, and I'll say it again, I'm a Christian, the Bible says, train up a child in the way that they shall go so that when they depart, they'll come back. That means give them all the tools they need, and when they don't listen and they're bad behind, decide I'm going to do what I want to do and get in trouble, trust me. The things that you input in them, they're going to come back to them. And that's how we get the Haywoods of the world today. That's how we get them back as men. That's how we get the change around. Ms. Shalali, I know you was trying to make an attempt to say something. Go ahead, honey. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I was just going to say, listen to Mr. Haywood's story. He had gotten to a certain point where it seemed like he had adversity. You know, everywhere he turned, he couldn't get any assistance. And, you know, I'm just really, you know, amazed by his story of him continuing to press forward until he was able to establish his own business, because everywhere he was turning, it was a no. No one wanted to help him. He couldn't get any assistance. And I'm thinking, if you can't get assistance coming out of prison, and being homeless, and the government can't assist you, like, those are the people that probably need some assistance, I would think, but they can't get any. I had no idea that you cannot get anything. So that was something I didn't know about.
They would not give me anything. They wouldn't give me any type of help. I was literally told by social service to go back doing what I was doing just when I tried to
get
some
food
stamps.
Yes,
I went down. My son's mother took me to social service because the very first Monday I was out of prison, we went down there just to see if I could get some assistance, you know, get some food stamps for the household, anything. They told me they cannot do anything for me. I need to go back and do what I was doing. Selling drugs. If I had committed a murder, if I had raped someone, we could give you all the help you want.
Are you kidding me, Mr. Haywood?
Mr. Haywood, you had to commit murder?
You had to commit murder or rape somebody in order to get some public assistance. You've got to be kidding me. And we don't think we need to bring some changes?
Right.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Haywood. You are sharing a plethora of information. And, yeah, we want to hear some more of your story because this right here, now you educating us. See, everybody don't know that. See, and that's the thing. We don't know everything until we engage in conversation. Just because I got a degree don't mean I know everything. I got a degree in a specific field. I know things about that field, and I still can learn more about that field. But if you don't engage, listeners, callers, listen to me clearly. If you do not engage in conversation such as this, you will not ever know what really is going on out here. You have to open up yourself to have conversation with people no matter their color, no matter their background, no matter their status, because you will learn. We are being educated. I had no idea that I have to murder somebody or rape somebody if I've been in prison to come out and help in the system help me get back on my feet. This is what we're paying our tax dollars for, y'all. for them to not help people, especially men coming out of prison or women. I guess it goes across the board. This is what's hurting us, because they come out and they can't reestablish themselves. When, guess what? Half of us, if we would have got caught, would be in prison too. Some of us are only out because of God's grace. We didn't get caught. So you mean to tell me I'm paying my tax dollars? My brother went to prison. Yes, he messed up. He sure did. But if Jesus can forgive him, so can I. But I'm paying my tax dollars for you to tell him you can't give him no assistance unless he rape or murder somebody? Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Haywood, because now I know my next step.
Yeah, like I said, that's what social service will tell you. If you have that type of a drug charge, they will tell you they cannot do anything for you. So they basically threw me back out to the wolves, like, you know, go do what you were doing. And when I looked at that, you know, I was like, man, I'm not going back to prison. I have to do something. And I said, you know, it's a challenge to see if I could get this plumbing license. It's a challenge to see if I could start my own business. So I accepted the challenge. Because I knew I could easily go back to selling drugs if that's what I had to do. You know, that's easy. We can do that.
Right. And
so
William,
I took the challenge. How I was able to get my plumbing license and start my own business is after the guy that I worked for in prison told me him and his wife threw my paperwork in the trash, I called the state back and I let them know, like, okay, you guys have given me this man's address. You've given me his phone number. I've reached out to him. He's throwing my paperwork in the trash. The only thing that I know to do is to go to his house. And what that's going to do is him end up calling the police on me, me
right.
being arrested, ended up getting back into trouble. Right then the exam coordinator told me, no, don't do that. We have something else for you to do. And they gave me a task. And be honest with you, I wish they had gave me that task first. They told me if I can get two plumbing inspectors out of the state, two business owners and two homeowners, to say that they have seen my work and my work is satisfactory and passes, they will allow me to take a character review, which then I had to drive to Statesville, and the guy that I worked for, the guy that taught me the plumbing, he had to come and say how he paid me cash under the table for X amount of years, jeopardizing his livelihood, just so they would allow me to take a test. Then I took that test and passed it the first time and been in business ever since. So those were my challenges.
The person who actually stepped up for you, they actually could have lost their own business.
Yes. Yes. He actually was placed on probation for 3 years for paying me cash under the table. They placed him on his license on probation for 3 years.
And I think that's what we lack a lot in the community, is somebody who's willing to make that sacrifice to help someone else.
And, you know, to this day, he's one of my best friends, because what he's given me, he didn't even give to his own son. And his son and me are the same age, and he actually died last year of a drug overdose. So, you know, like I said, you know, when he gave me that opportunity, I seized it, because no one else had given me any type of opportunity like that besides him. Like I said, the state didn't want to give me any help. Social service didn't want to give me any help. Federal government didn't want to give me any help. Put back out here, I felt like I was either going to be a crackhead, because, you know, when you're going through hurt and you're going through things, you never know what you turn to. So I felt like, you know, my life could have ended up either back in prison for the rest of it, or I could have been one of these guys you see standing on the corner somewhere. And I didn't want that, especially with me having a child. And, you know, my whole focus with starting this business and being successful was to ultimately come back to where I'm at today to pursue getting into my son's life and, you know, get custody, or not custody, but visitation rights and privileges. In fact, May 23rd, I just had a DNA test completed proving that I am his father, and now I'm in court, going through family courts now, and I'm at the mediation stages now. So that's my story.
And And I'm glad that you actually brought up the topic of your son, and I was really wanting to see if you were going to bring it up, because that's another success story in its own too. But I just want to take a quick break, and then I want to come back and talk about a little bit of that with you.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to A to Zaya's Blog Talk Radio Show, and today our topic is success is never out of reach. We have a personal guest here on the show today, and we hope that you are listening and that you'll join in. Also remember, A to Zaya's always have shows every Saturday and sometimes during the week. You can go to www.a2zaus.com, as well as our partner, the president of Justice from A to Zaya's, her website as a new writer, www.mzworthit.com, and view any upcoming events, any upcoming radio shows of the sort. Please continue to listen as Mr. Lawrence Haywood, Plumbing Services Incorporated, educates us on how life obstacles, situations, and difficulties cannot stop you if you are determined and you have hope. Once again, Justice from A to Zaya's Blog Talk Radio Show.
And welcome back. As we're talking about how success is never out of reach, some people like to put the label of success just being monetary or financial or, you know, economical status, social status, and so have you. One of the things that you share with us is before going to prison or during your incarceration, you lost basically your son, your family. And so you were going to speak on, like, your plight.
Let's back up. I never had my son. Let's get that right. Because he was born while I was in prison. So technically, I've never had my son. I've never been in his life. What I'm doing is I'm trying to be in my son's life. That's what all this, you know, becoming successful is for. I didn't want my son to see me in a negative way because he spent his first 2 years coming to visit me in prison. And I refused for him to ever see me in that stage again. He'll never see me in a place like that again. And I'm doing everything I can to keep him from having to go to a place like that. You know, that's my motivation for where I'm at today and to where I'm going in the future, is to make sure that he doesn't have to go through anything that I went through throughout my childhood, teenage years, or young adult life. I don't want that to be his experience.
And how many times have you seen your son within this past year?
I haven't seen my son since he was 3 years old.
And why is that?
Well, I really couldn't answer that for you. I'm still trying to figure that out myself. I just know the mother had told me he wasn't my child. The attempts I made to prove he was my child, I was blocked by her. I finally was able to get the court system to finally hear my case this year. So I'm in courts now, and I still haven't got an answer to that, you know, why she's kept my son away from me. Like I said, I just got a DNA test May 23rd proving that it is my son. So, you know, it's one of those things that I really don't care to find out why she kept my son from me no more. I got the most important thing, is to establish he is my son. And I'm working on, you know, getting into his life.
Well, I'm glad that you're sharing this story, because a lot of the fathers feel, in most cases, that they don't have any rights, or they don't even have, you know, enough just to go off on trying to pursue custody or visitation rights with their own children. And so,
well,
is there another challenge you would say that you're taking up, like with your plumbing license?
To speak on that, I was actually scared. Speaking on some of the stuff that you just talked about, I felt like I didn't have any rights. And really, I didn't have any rights, because while my son was born, I was incarcerated. So I wasn't able to sign a birth certificate. So technically, I had to prove, I had to establish paternity. And when I attempted to do it years ago through child support enforcement, that was another obstacle. They were willing to take my money. I had offered my child, my son's mother, $450 a week just in an attempt to see my son. She turned it down. Child support enforcement offered me a DNA test. I took that DNA test. A few months went by. I heard nothing about the results. When I called child support enforcement, I was told by them that it's voluntary for the mothers. They back the mothers. They do not back the fathers. So it's voluntary for her, and she chose not to show up. She said, it's not my child. And I had to take that from them. And one thing they told me is if she was pursuing me, they would come after me with the entire book. But with me pursuing her, they have to defend her rights. So
exactly. And Mr. Haywood,
yes.
You know, that your story, what you're talking about is definitely true. I actually know two gentlemen who went through this exact process that you're going through, and I just want to let you know that there's hope at the end of the tunnel, because both of those gentlemen, now one of them has full custody, because she went so far with it that the judge reversed it and gave him full custody of his son, and his son now lived with him for the third year. This was 3 years ago when he finally got the full custody, and then the other one has visitation rights. You know, he gets to see his child often. So when I tell you, and yes, it took a lot, you know, like they said, both of them stated they made some sacrifices. And it was like, you know, yeah, it was going to cost some money, but they got them the best attorneys they can get, and they fought, because the one guy who has full custody, he said, look, that's my seed. That's my legacy. I am not going to let this continue, because at first he didn't want to get into the battle. He was just like, you know what, every time I'm trying, I'm this girl fighting me. But if something turned around, the encouragement of others that, look, that's your son. And he said when he really understood, he was in the military, and he was in his 20s, Mr. Haywood. He said, but somebody began to talk to him about his seed and that, you know, his legacy, and that's his child. Mm-hmm. He should always fight. He went the distance, and I just want you to know you have hope at the end of the tunnel, because both of those men have relationships and see their children. One of them live with them, and the other one have complete visitation.
Well, I'm fine, you know, and like you said, I know there's hope due to the fact that, you know, when I started pushing this paperwork, everything just fell into place for me. I walked into the courthouse, and someone called my name, and it happened to be a woman. I did some plumbing repairs for their house, a major leak. She worked down there. She literally went in there and signed the paper and waived all of my filing fees. So I don't even pay for none of this stuff right now. It's all free for me, and
yeah,
I'm all the way to mediation state. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm fine, you know. I'm just doing what I know is right, you know, trying to get into my son's life. And like you said, legacy, that's the most important thing, because, you know, he's my seed. He's going to tell my story 20, 30 years down the road from now, you know. And I don't want him to tell
exactly
a negative story of his father. You know,
yep.
When he speaks of me in 20 years from now, it's going to be something positive, whether it's the story I'm sharing with you guys today or something different. But it's not going to be, my father was a 5-time convicted felon. He spent his whole time in prison. I never saw him. You know, it's not going to be that story. That's not the story I want my son to share about.
Exactly. Man,
so
you're amazing.
I do everything within my power to make sure that he doesn't know anything about it. If he knows anything about my past, he's going to have to do some research, like anybody else who have to do a background check on me.
Well, I think coming from you, once you get that relationship established and you sharing your story with him, it's going to be amazing and powerful, because it is a story that your son is going to walk proudly to be able to say, yes, my father made some mistakes, but look at the strides and the determination and the consistency and how he never gave his persistence. He never gave up. Man, look, you're going to be able to share your story, bad, good, and ugly, with that boy, and look at here. He's going to be proud with his head up, because I'm proud, and I don't even know you, bro. I'm standing here smiling. I want to meet you face to face. I'm telling you. Look, Quadrilla, all I have to say is make sure we have his information, because whenever we're doing something and he's available to come out and speak to our young men, I want this man on my team. I want this man on my team. So, Mr. Haywood, if I'm feeling that way, yeah, your son may go through a little bumping, but when he gets the real deal, when you start engaging in that boy and leading that boy and telling him, he's going to be proud of his daddy. I already know that. already know that.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
And with you talking about your legacy and Ms. Laura, with you commenting about how you want for him to speak in the community to other young people, Lawrence, if you could share what you have done with your business to personally try to reach back and encourage others.
I mean, every day, you know, I reach out, you know, if I see a young man out there, you know, especially if they're 17, 18 year old and they're at the crossroads, I try to give them back this knowledge because I wish someone had taught me plumbing at 18 years old. I feel like right now I'm 10 years behind in my business because all the knowledge that I'm soaking up now, I should have had, you know. And that's one thing that I want to do is make sure that my son has a choice. I'm not saying that he has to be a plumber. I don't say that he has to take over my business or run my business, but he needs to have a backup plan. And, you know, when I see a lot of young guys out there at crossroads, you know, they're thinking about go getting a job at McDonald's or one of these places, I tell them, man, just come and work with me for the summer. You know, let's see what I do. Yeah, it's hard work, this or that, but look at the money that I'm making. You know, look what I'm making. Look at how I dress, how I present myself, and see that I'm living the same way as those drug dealers over there. I'm doing something positive. But every day I give jobs to people, you know, friends out of the community, people out of the community, young kids, and I'm burned every day with it, with you. I've had guys to literally come out to my job and insult me. You know, I've had guys walk off the jobs telling me, you know, if you was a white man, we would be this way, that way. Different challenges. But I try every day to give back to the community, you know, pass the knowledge on. Or some type of employment that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you, Lawrence, for hanging in there with us because we've actually gone over our time, and I know that you're a busy businessman. Ladies, are there any other questions for Mr. Haywood or acknowledgement?
I don't know about the other ladies, but I would like to say, Mr. Haywood, first and foremost, I want to thank you for coming on the show. This is Ms. Barnett, and I just want you to know I really want to connect with you with our men in the organization to be a part of what we're doing, and we can, you know, discuss that off the air. Actually, Ms. Quadrilla can talk to you a little bit more and get you involved whenever you have the availability, because especially what you're talking about, teaching your skill, you're right. I totally agree. You know, you may not want to be a plumber at first, but just to have that skill for on the back burner or that extra money, that second job that we all need most times in life, heck, I might need to come learn some trade in plumbing so I can do my own thing because I used to be in a construction company.
You can fix stuff in your own house.
Right, exactly. So if no more than that, if we can probably have a workshop where, you know, we start doing some things where you can teach us and my members will be involved. So we really look forward to doing business with you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Definitely check us out on any of our shows. You can go to YouTube and check them out. And anytime you want to be a part, don't hesitate to call in. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to me. You guys have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Lawrence.
All right, talk to you later,
Roger. All right. Ms. Moore, I tell you, your guest was a great guest. Ladies, I don't know if there are other callers still on, but great dialogue because that was amazing. Like, you know, to have to go through all of that. And, of course, we know, you know, he did some things wrong. But he paid, and that's one of the things I just want listeners to understand that America, part of America is not getting. It's not that we don't acknowledge that blacks on blacks aren't doing things, I mean, are doing things against each other. Heck, Asians are doing things against each other. Whites are too. You just don't hear a lot about it in the media. So it's not just black on black crime out here and black people running into issues and getting in trouble and going to prison. The statistics may be high in some areas for one race than it is the other. But, however, here's the thing. This gentleman came on here, and he taught us a lot. I mean, he has climbed the ladder and he's paid his due for his crime. So that's exactly what we're saying when it comes to what's going on right now about police brutality. All we're saying is that if you do something wrong, because you should not, it should not be justifiable for you to literally murder a person and definitely obsessive force, shooting people 10, 15, 13, 12 times, whatever. That's not acceptable. So all we're saying, if you're out there listening, America, is that, yes, Black Lives Matter, because that's who we're, who's dying right now. And, yes, all lives matter. But we want justice, just like justice was served on Mr. Haywood, Lawrence Haywood. He had to do prison time. He got a record behind him now that it's like a stamp. I did wrong, and it's always there for him. But he was, he did, he served his time, he paid his due, and now he is a productive citizen back out here doing what's right, empowering those so that other people won't make that mistake. That's all we're saying. Justice across the board, fairly. Men, are you, if you're listening, males, young boys, look, you do not, you can miss that. That's why he's sharing. You're going to have other issues you got to go through. But this one, he has shared. And so, Quadrilla, you did it. I mean, thank you for having such a phenomenal topic and having such a great guest. I mean, I really appreciate it. It was just a great show. I mean, I know it's not over, but I just had to say that.
And what I really hope that people grasp is that his success did not come overnight. He still faced multiple challenges. Like with me knowing him personally, it took at least 2 years for him to get his plumbing license, but he never gave up, and he still pressed forward. So, you know, that instant gratification, that has to be thrown out the window. You know, it was him that told me nothing good comes easy. You got to work for it. That's where I learned that from him. And he kept pressing forward no matter what. And even now, hopefully we can bring him back for a part two with what he's facing with his son. At first he was scared. He even talked to me about it. You know, he's like, they're going to bring up everything that I've done and some of the stuff that I may be doing now and try to put a twist on it. But he's still pressing forward now. And the greatest accomplishment that he got was the DNA test. So now, you know, the mother can stop saying he's not your son.
Exactly, exactly. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Someone else was about to say something. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that whole thing with the child paternity and child support enforcement, not trying to help the fathers, that absolutely set me ablaze. I did not know that it was such a double standard in that war.
Yeah.
That is absolutely, I was livid. I started, my face started burning. Like,
and what he did is that he actually went down there and told him, put me on child support right now. I want it. Put me on child support just to get his guaranteed visitation. And they told him no. He called me on that day and told me what was going on.
Wow.
We could not put him back on child support. He's willing to come out of his pocket and pay, and they still told him no. She has to do it.
Yeah, Ms. Hall, I was too. I was, like, astonished by that, but I knew of two other gentlemen who had, in, you know, had similar situations, and that's why I just had to share with him that definitely there is success and hope at the end of this tunnel, because it's proven at least by two that I know. So if it's two that I know it has to be others out there, you know, in this world who have been successful. And that's one of the things, Ms. Quadrilla, your topic talks about success is never out of reach. That's one of the things that we really have to grasp this topic and this understanding, because there's a lot of things where there's not justice on every level. Look, we just found out, you know, how men, you know, who are really, just because they had some issues and the woman gonna decide you're not good enough for your child. You know, but you've changed your life. This man has changed his life, and the system is against him, you know, doing what's right. So we have to know that there is success in every area of our life if we just follow and be consistent and persistent. We have to not give up and get tired. That's one of the things. You know, the Bible tells us don't get weary in well-doing. We can't get tired. And I know we say that because I just said it yesterday. I'm just so tired. But before I can end my night, I had a boost of energy that, guess what? I don't give up. I can't give up. Look, I'm the child of the King. There's no reason for any human being to give up, even when it gets tough. Life is tough, and we do have challenges. But, however, there is success. It's just a reach away. It's just a reach away, and you, when one say no, you just have to keep going and go through another door. Somebody eventually is going to acknowledge, because there's more people out there who are positive. You just may be, and you may have to move yourself out of the negative surroundings that you're in and find the positive people. And then when you build yourself up, come back to that negative circle and empower them. I mean, there's so many areas. We know we just talked to Lawrence, you know, about going to prison and then coming out to have success. But Misty Jones, are you still on the show?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
I could, you know, and I'm not trying to take over Miss Moore's show, but I'm just thinking about this area was so powerful. So we got one aspect, but just from a female perspective, you know, I know you just start your business. You know, how can you share about even possible challenges that you may face, but knowing that success is right there? I mean, you've had some success. You launched your own magazine.
Right. It's, well, what can I say? I mean, it's like Ms. Hall say, it's adversity everywhere you turn. But as a scripture in the Bible said, but he would, you know, he's there for us. He would help us through it. You know what I'm saying? When he left, he gave us a comforter. And his word is, you know, is a guidance to me. So even if I fall in things that I'm doing, you know, as far as a business or whatever, even if I fall short of something, I know if I keep on going, you know, I just keep on pushing. Me, I just keep on pushing like Mr. Howard, you know, when he said somebody threw his paperwork away or things fall through, plans fall through or whatever. Just with my building, I got one side. I was supposed to get another side. And then, you know, now the town of Spring Lake is saying this or saying that. So I'm like at a standstill right now. So I have to wait. You know, things fall through, but I'm holding on to his word. I'm holding on to his promise. Even if it stops here, I can go somewhere else. If they don't let me in the front door, I'm going to come through the back, just simple as that. Because
wow.
I'm reaching for things that I cannot see. I know I want it. You know, God put it in my heart. So if you don't let me in the front door, I'm coming through the back door. One way or the other, I'm coming in. I'm coming in. A lot of people want to build walls up to stop somebody from doing something because they feel like, oh, she don't deserve it, or she not supposed to be here. But who are you to tell me where I'm supposed to be at when my God says something different?
That's
so
right.
I'm coming in one way or the other.
I'm glad that you all enjoyed the show. I thought long and hard about who I really wanted to bring onto the show to speak on this particular topic, and it really wasn't a no-brainer when his name popped up in my head. And as far as like a closing remark, you're right, Misty. If they won't let you in the front, it's always a back door.
Right.
So I think that's a great motto to remember. We're going to go through the back. ladies, any other closing remarks?
No.
No? Okay. Well, I thank you all for coming on and listening, and I'll be sure to pass along his information. If you have anyone in the area, he also services Virginia, so he's licensed in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So if we can push for his business to gain even more success, let's do it, ladies.
And Ms. Moore, let's just mention Mr. Haywood's, Lawrence Haywood, Haywood Plumbing Services Incorporated, 24-hour emergency response, and his number is 704 675-7246. If you are in the North Carolina or Virginia area, reach out. You know, you never know if he can help you or not. Don't just assume, well, I don't think he can reach my area. Reach out anyway. Let's support our black-owned businesses as best that we can, and black-owned businesses give the best service that you can. And even if they, even if you get bad service, come on now, I done been to the Asian shops and got bad service, and
right.
yeah, back in the day, then went off, but then I still go right back because they,
right
they had what I needed. So let's stop talking about black-owned businesses give bad service. So if they give bad service, why don't you be the positive person and say, well, you know, just encourage them. You know, if you get a bad cashier, one of my new things is when I get to the counter, if the person looks mean or they being rude, I'd be like, girl, you didn't have a rough day like me too, huh? Or, child, you better smile with that pretty, with your pretty self. You know, we got to start trying to help each other. I need you to bring me out when I'm tripping. So let's support black-owned businesses. Please, please, please definitely check out Mr. Lawrence Haywood, Positive Man. And we want to thank, I want to thank Ms. Cordura Moore for such a successful show.
Ooh.
And you're just a phenomenal host. We really appreciate you. And, of course, this is your girl, Ms. Worth It. Check me out at www.mzworthit.com. And come conversate with me. Come, you know, have some collaboration with me via my blog. Thank you so much, for Cordura, for allowing me to be on your show.
All right. Thank you all. Have a great day.
All right, this has been A to Zayas Blog Talk Radio Show. We thank you for listening. Check us out every Saturday at the same location, www.atozayas.com, and you can dial in at 516-595-8311. We greatly appreciate you, and have a great Saturday.
Gather round. Witness the memoirs of 5'9 being read as he sees it fit. Police sirens behind him while he's driving instantly causes butterflies in his stomach, even though he's legit.
Now, brothers and sisters, they have not stopped. It's about to hit the fan.